From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
Patrick Henningsen is an American writer and global affairs analyst and founder of the independent news and analyst website 21st Century Wire and host of the weekly Sunday Wire radio show, co-anchor of Britain's UK column news streaming TV show, and is also a regular on-air analyst. Why am I having trouble with that word? It's creeping me out. For RT International News, as a journalist, he has covered events on the ground in the Middle East, including work in Syria, Iraq, as well as coverage across Europe and North America. And he's also the host of the incredible Patrick Henningsen Show, Monday through Friday, 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern. He can hike Camelback Mountain at dawn. He's a friend of mine, and he's here right now. What is up, Patrick? Why can't I say the word analyst?
I don't know. I don't want to go there. Just stay away from analysts and couches and shrinks.
Analyze. Yes.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Listen, we have so much to talk about, man. I'm enjoying following you. I'm stalking you on Twitter. I love it. I love your tweets. Having you back on that platform is amazing. What do you think? Are you psyched? There's a bunch I want to get into that, because I also saw you in the big room with Ron DeSantis and Elon Musk. I want to go into all that and get your take on all of it. What do you think about being back on Twitter? Is your freak flag flying? Are you feeling free and loose? Are you loving life? What's going on?
Well, that's like, because the time difference, I'm in the UK right now, and you know, you're in the Pacific time zone, so we're 8 hours apart. So it's like 2 a.m. here. Yeah. So I basically had to hang out in a Twitter space for the last 6 hours just to make sure I was going to be awake to do this this interview. But I was in a space with a couple of really great co-hosts, Khaleesi and Jam, and we had a really good space. It turned into a COVID barroom brawl fight. Talking about vaccines and terrain theory and everything like that, monkeypox, and then it sort of shifted into other stuff as well. But China and all sorts.
Is that the COVID thing for us in the old so-called truth movement? We fight over terrain theory versus is COVID real? I know you kind of have a strong opinion about that. I saw a tweet you did where you were like, something's a red herring, gain of function. I was like,
lab leak, gain of function.
Now he's going there.
Yeah, all that. Now, lab leak, gain of function. But yeah, you get a lot of pushback from it. It's a bit like when you're questioning climate change, and you can hear Greta Thunberg in the background.
How dare you?
Basically telling everybody off.
Amazing. Listen, I don't care about that so much. I don't know why. I'm really deep into the, like, don't mandate a shot on me or my friends or anyone on this planet. Don't put on ridiculous masks. I have strong feelings about that. But whether it's terrain theory, gain of function real or not, where the thing came from, I don't really care. Because my passion is, I think it's an agenda to further subjugate and control and somewhat depopulate, ruin people's health or whatever it is, weird and all kinds of things. But I think the injection is really the thing we should be concerned about. So I don't understand all this infighting about the origins of COVID itself. Can you explain to me why that is a source of passion for some people?
I think it's like we've been conditioned over like decades of watching these Hollywood films like Contagion, and there's a whole bunch of these like biological threat films. We've all been TV programs, all sorts of stuff, tales of the Cold War and bioweapons research and all these things. I think it's really done a number on people's heads, but prepared them into this kind of hypochondriac fear mode socially, and we're doing this collectively, and I think there's just it's something exotic about it. It captures people's imagination. It's the fear of the unknown, fear of the invisible microbe, and then you add that with the Chinese element, everyone's been conditioned to be suspicious of China. You add Fauci in there, and it's just like a cocktail from hell, Joseph.
All right. Yeah. Now I get it. When you say it like that, maybe I am. So you're more terrain theory, is that right? You don't believe in the sort of there's a microbiome or some kind of parasite out there that's going to kill us.
No, microbiome's in your gut. That's a
right.
Real
thing. I know. I said that wrong. But yeah, I know that.
I know the terrain. Okay,
you know what I meant.
Germ theory is viruses are contagious. These microscopic things that nobody can see. They're so small you can't even photograph them. But take our word for it, they exist. And then you have terrain theory, which says that if you get ill, it's because something out of your body is either out of balance. You're malnutrition. You're under stress. Your gut isn't healthy. You're not eating correctly. You're having a stressful event. You're being pelted by chemical toxins within your environment. And so that's when you get sick and your body purges.
That's what I believe.
So you're a terrain guy. You don't even know it.
I'm learning. You're teaching. This is school. This is called TNT school right now. The guest host teacher is Patrick Henningsen, and you've just taught me. I believe that. I'm a terrain guy then.
Your terrain, it totally suits you as well. You've got a terrain vibe. So, but the main thing you said was before you said the vaccine, that's a real thing. Okay, it is. That's provable. To me, SARS-CoV-2 lab leak is a conspiracy theory. The vax is real.
I see.
And that's what people need to be focused on.
Yeah. Okay. So it is right to focus on that. But no, I definitely vibe with the terrain theory thing much more. I thought, yeah. And do you believe
I got to introduce you to planes? The terrain community, Joseph. There's so many cool cats in the terrain community. Well,
I'm going to stalk you on Twitter. I'm going to get in on, I'm going to see when you're on a space and you're going to see.
Dude, we got secret spaces. We have to do it like in the basement of Twitter. There's like these hidden spaces. I'll give you the secret password, Joseph.
Yeah, I'm going to get into a fight in a Twitter space on your behalf. I'm going to be like, hey, listen, I used to be ambivalent about all this terrain theory versus viral theory hoopla. And then I got schooled by Patrick Henningsen. Now, Woody Harrelson was talking about terrain.
Was he
Bill Maher? Did you see that? Yeah,
Woody
on Bill Maher's podcast.
I'll bet you Bill Maher didn't like that. Did he? Bill Maher's definitely a germ guy.
Probably, but Bill Maher is red pilling before our very eyes, man. Because he's gone deep against all this vaccine stuff for sure. He's like fully put a line in the sand there. And then I watched him interview what's her name, the redheaded comedian that was on. Kathy Griffin or Griffith or Griffin.
Sure. She's crazy.
Right. And I almost didn't watch it, but I was like, you know what? Let me put it on. And then she went into, and actually I kind of felt for her because she's been really canceled and she was talking about that. And so I kind of actually felt for her, but then she went in like, what do you give us 7 years left to live on the planet? We're destroying the planet. She veered off of her cancellation into that subject. And Bill Maher surprisingly pushed back on the environmental propaganda now. And it was like watching, oh, he's going through all the phases. I went through those same phases. I was like, at first it was like the vaccine and all this. Then all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, if that's not real, what about this environmental stuff? You do some research. And he's on the cusp of that one too. So who knows? He might be more of a terrain guy than you give him credit for.
He might even register Republican. Like he's doing the full transition, isn't he?
Yeah, except for, and that is a good segue into what else I wanted to talk to you about, because I might be a Democrat again. I think I am. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is my top favorite contender at the moment. I mean, he backed Roger Waters. I saw your tweets backing Roger Waters. I think I responded to one of yours on that. I backed Roger Waters too. It's ridiculous, all the accusations about him because he's putting on a theatrical presentation. I want to get your take on that. But first, what do you think of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. versus Ron DeSantis?
I'm very impressed with RFK because he's the first politician. Well, he's not a politician, but he is now because he's in the campaign arena. But he can totally articulate the foreign policy issues with full context and understanding of the whole issue. And of course, on the public health issue, he's about as strong as you can get on things like vaccines, freedom and liberty and lockdowns and all these issues that are really important to people that we know. Yeah. And so I like, you know, I like a lot about RFK. He ticks a lot of boxes for me. Ron DeSantis, he's as a governor, I think he's been phenomenal. I think he's been great for the Republican Party in Florida. But it's all anti-woke, anti-Disney, okay, that's fine. But, you know, local people will deal with those issues, parents at school board meetings. But he doesn't have any, like, national gravitas to say, this is the way the economy is going to go. We're going to stop the war in Ukraine. You know how Trump is. He goes right for the jugular. It's like Trump knows what the big issues are and he hits them hard. And DeSantis is like kind of a lawyer, politician guy. He's got kind of a squeaky voice. Doesn't work for me. It's literally the hair is not standing up on the back of my neck, Joseph, with DeSantis. So and he wears Chelsea boots with an inch and a half heel on it because apparently he's not that tall. And that's not good either.
Okay. This is Patrick Henningsen on fire, ladies and gentlemen. This is like, here it is. I mean, I love it. That analysis. I have to learn this word when talking to you because that is your strong suit, is analyzing the events going on in our life. And I mean, that vibes with me. The other thing you tweeted today as well was about this is a red flag. Governor Ron DeSantis signed into law Thursday a bill that targets hate crimes following a series of recent anti-Semitic incidents across Florida. Explain, is this is an attack on our First Amendment, isn't it?
It's kind of like circling the wagons on the First Amendment, and this is a state, you know, obviously a state legislation. So, you know, however restrictive any of these so-called hate speech initiatives are, they would probably get knocked back up at the Supreme Court level. But, you know, by that point, what sort of damage is done along the way? I just see a general trend where there's all these attacks on free speech under the guise of, you know, countering hate online, right, et cetera. You know, where does it end? And in the UK and Europe, it's literally out of control, these sort of anti-hate speech laws and regulations. So America has to hold the line on that.
So he is a secret globalist in your view, beating the anti-woke drum is kind of like, what do you call it? That wooden horse that they crept in behind the walls in in mythology.
His Trojan horse
is anti-woke agenda, but secretly he's just another globalist that's going to like decimate art. But he does talk the talk about authoritarianism. We were both in that room. I liked that room. He got a lot of pushback on it being all softball stuff, like no questions about the war in Ukraine and stuff like that. And that I could see, but as a general introduction as a presidential candidate, I thought it was pretty good. What'd you think?
Yeah, there's some issues that I like the fact that he's basically, you know, in Florida, he said no CBDCs. Okay. And the woke stuff, the anti-woke stuff. Yeah, I support all that. But the thing is, you know, to do things at a governor level with the executive orders or whatever, marshaling the state legislature and whatnot, doing it on a national level, you know, then he has to say, if he's running for president, he has to say, I'm going to take on Wall Street. I'm going to pull Jamie Dimon, Citibank, and all these guys. I'm going to put them in a room and then say, stick your CBDC where the sun doesn't shine. Like, because that's the type of thing I would expect if he's negative on the issue. But he's not saying that. He's just like, this is what I've done in Florida. Americans want to know what you're going to do nationally, and they want to know what you're going to do internationally. This is what's missing with Ron DeSantis. And I dare say, I think he doesn't have the equipment to do that. Trump doesn't have the detail, the intelligence, the nuance. Trump doesn't like granular details. He's like, he's a New Yorker. Forget about it. So, but Trump is
Forget
ready
about
to deal.
It.
Yeah, he knows there's a deal to be done, and Trump will go right to the core of the issue and then try to fix the core, like with Ukraine. He says, I'll end it in 24 hours. Hey, that's music to my ears. He can't name all the players and all the laws and international. No, but I'll end it. And I believe him, Joseph. If Trump says he's going to do it, I'll absolutely believe him. So I support that. The dream ticket is Trump with RFK Jr. That's the dream ticket. RFK is vice president.
Okay, I'm with you on that, but I got to push back on a little bit. The thing you just said about Trump reminds me of when they talk about in music mixing, you're supposed to mix with the big crayons, meaning the tambourine should be a little too loud in the chorus, like in Beatles songs. It should be like, huh, that seems a little, you know what I mean? Big crayons, not little nuancey things. You want things to sort of stab. And Trump's approach to something like Ukraine is like, politics with the big crayons. Like, I don't really get all the nuances, but I'm ending this. You know what I mean? It's like totally. A kid with two big crayons.
Totally. No, that was a good space. Yeah, but it crashed the first time. Then Elon, you could hear DeSantis's wife chewing him out. You sounded robotic. That sort of caught on the way out before the thing crashed. But then they restarted under his campaign donor, David Sacks, I think. And then it was a much smaller space. They lost about half the listeners. And then they did it. And it was okay, but there was a lot of hype to it. But yeah, get in some of our Twitter spaces and the Terrain space. I think you need to get in there. You're spending too much time in the Pepe Coin community. Joseph, I'm stalking you as well. No, but I can see where you're at just on the top of the screen. It shows all the available spaces and it says who I know's in it. So like I literally, without even going in, I know where you're at. It's crazy, isn't it?
I know. It's such a call out. Well, listen, it's a passion of mine, the old cryptocurrency. I can't hide it. I love it. I think it's important in this, you know, you talk about prepping and prepper stuff. There's where I'm prepping, you know, and it's it works out. You know, I don't
like
want to go all into
with
it.
Pepe but. In it. I think we need to support frogs because they're oppressed minorities right now. So I support anything with a Pepe in it. I'm all behind. We need to treat them and not other them and not marginalize the frogs.
Yeah, I don't want to shill Pepe, but no other coin has reached, it reached a $1 billion market cap in 19 days. Yeah, I don't want to shill Pepe, but no other coin has reached, it reached a $1 billion market cap in 19 days. No other coin has even come close. And it, to me, seems like an onboarding for people. If you consider like people trying to buy Bitcoin, for one, Bitcoin sounds like a bit of a coin. It's not fun. And one costs like 27 grand right now, whereas Pepe is for the people. You can buy lots of it, you know. And there's a cute frog meme that's older than MySpace. So the marketing is essential. That's sort of the thesis in a nutshell that I do think it'll pop off. And I think it might actually do that quite soon because there's been a debt ceiling deal reached. And so people are going to be insecure. They're insecure about where they want to put their money, the banking system collapsing and all the rest of it. It's a good time to be alive, Patrick. I want to ask you a little bit more, but let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You know, a four-year-old child was dropped over the wall in San Diego.
Right.
Okay,
yep.
Just left, and there was gunfire at border control. We have that. We have the Democrats announcing no border security bill will be passed until citizens of the United States accept more poor migrants. I want to remind everybody, this is an invasion on America. These are illegal aliens. This is about we want people to come here legally. And a reminder that a million people do come here legally every year. And a million people also come here on a temporary work type of situation. So we're already taking in 2 million a year. And I've just been made aware in my city, my state, up to 80,000 migrants. Again, they use the word migrants. I say illegal aliens are coming to New York. The leaders here, Democratic leaders, are all asking the current occupant of the White House to waive work restrictions. Why, after all, they need to get right to work. So they're bringing disease. They're bringing all kinds of things. Now they're going to go work. I don't know what's going on here, except we know it's wrong. We know it's criminal. I think we have to pray for America.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts.
It isn't a theory.
It's an agenda.
There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So I got up at 5 in the morning and I went to Camelback, but I lollygagged around in Starbucks. I didn't have Patrick Henningsen there with me, you know, cracking the whip, getting us there at dawn. And by the time I got there, the parking lot was full. It's Saturday. I had to drive around. I went and got gas. I went back through the parking lot 3 times, finally found a space. Did Camelback in your honor, which for those that don't know is a massive mountain in Arizona. Patrick and I have hiked it several times, but we usually do it before the sun comes up. I needed you there, man. Where were you?
I saw that picture. I retweeted the picture, I think. Yeah, I saw that. That was epic. It was epic. Yeah, I missed that. I think we did 6 or 7 climbs, didn't we? It was hard at the beginning, but by the end of it, I've never been in such good shape after 6 climbs. Yeah. You're literally eating nails. You're like Apollo Creed in, training Rocky too. It's like crazy.
Oh yeah. You're out training Rocky we're talking Russian winter, I don't know, running with huge tires around your neck. We're talking that level. It took us an hour and a half to get up there when we first started. Then we got down. Yeah. I did 45 minutes today. I got up in 45 minutes.
Man,
and I think that's
good.
What we did the last couple times we did it.
Yeah, that means you're pretty good shape then. 45 minutes, that's good.
I guess. Yeah, I was surprised. I did push it. I was like winded, you know, and all that. But I pushed it and I got up there in 45 minutes. So, yeah, I think I'm going to do it more regularly now because I'm starting to get fat for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it's age, but
it's you gotta balance it out. I know it's frustrating. Do you know why I'm very high energy right now, even though it's 2:30 in the morning? Because I'm doing a fast right now. So like, you know,
it's
after day three, your energy just starts peaking. And I went for a long hike today and I brought the liquids and I was like, so I like can't calm down. And it's great.
Dude,
no,
it's
carbs,
amazing.
No sugar, no carbs.
How many days are you in? Is it a water fast or just some?
It started as a water and a few coffees here and there, cups of tea and whatnot. Then I sort of after 3 days, I started, just introducing some basic proteins, some kefir, yogurt, and blueberries a little bit, and just a little bit, but definitely just keeping the calories down and trying to get the cleanse going, you know. So, it has to be done because I just felt like I was going off the rails, you know, and I needed to kind of reset the health, reset the body a little bit.
And what about the transition out? You're in England now. You're doing TNT 5 days a week, you know, from noon to 2 p.m. on Eastern time. I mean, how's life been since you were in Arizona? How's the transition back to the UK? And now you're fasting. That seems like a good sign.
Yeah, the weather's breaking here, but like, I'm not going to lie to you. The weather here is really dire. When I arrived at the end of November and the beginning of December, and it's just rainy and overcast and cold, not snowing cold, but cold sometimes. But that went on for months, and the weather only just broke last week. So now it's late spring, early summer coming in, different vibe. So there's more. I'm in a beautiful area for outdoors. I'm right on the sea in Cornwall, Devon and Cornwall. It's just amazing. So I'm trying to take advantage of it, but it's been hardcore. I started doing 5 days a week TNT in January. Plus, I got my Sunday show, which is an omnibus on Sunday Wire for 21stCenturyWire.com. And then I'm doing UK Column News on Friday. So Friday, I have a pretty, you know, I start it at, 8 a.m. and then do the live there, 2 hours, TV, that's on camera, and then get home quickly to the home studio to do the TNT show from 5 till 7 here. That's like 12 till 2 Eastern Standard Time in the U.S. But so really packed. Saturday is my only real day off at the moment. But I took on a lot more work because, well, TNT wanted to do more, and I just decided to bite the bullet and do more. But it's a lot more difficult than when you have those sort of 2 or 3 days to rest, you know, and you can like reset yourself. I have to try to redo my schedule where I have to do a daily reset rather than, you know, have that point in the week. And it's not ideal, but you got to find a way to adapt with it if you're going to do. And I've got another show that I'm recording for another TV channel, but that's a pre-recorded thing, so it's not too bad. But still, it's, you know, it's a lot of work.
And it's going to be hard for you to stay off Twitter because Twitter's become, and that's another aspect of like just even thinking of all broadcasting maybe should also have a Twitter link, Twitter Spaces linked to some of these radio shows or something like that. I don't know if we can do that on TNT or not. These is like the sort of, I think, the future of podcasting, certainly, if not radio and stuff. I mean, Twitter is turning into the everything app. It's where people are going with, like, Ron DeSantis. That's a revolutionary step. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Is obviously going to utilize that platform. It's the free speech platform. I mean, how do you divide your time up? You're working. I know how grueling that workload is, and then you're still going to be on Twitter. How are you going to divide that up? And Twitter is also obsessive. I don't know if you're obsessed with it. I've become obsessed with it between just political stuff and then the crypto stuff and the whole thing. Never mind music and art. You know, it's crazy.
It is addictive in a certain way. So before I got banned, Joseph, I got banned in October 2021, and it was all COVID strikes, you know, and I found out later I was in the Twitter file. So like I was already marked for, you know, getting, you know, shot down by these guys well before that. But when I got kicked off, I had so much more mental space, and like I was just messing around on Telegram a little bit. Telegram is very linear, but Twitter is totally interactive. You got DMs going, you got retweets, replies, you've got quote tweets, you've got people, you got all sorts of stuff coming and going on Twitter. And so then I came back. I was allowed back because of the good graces of the new Lord of the Manor, Elon the Merciful, and he allowed me back. So I'm back. I'm very grateful for that. I'm glad of what he did. I'm eternally grateful. But you're right, Joseph. It just sucks in a whole bunch of mental space and human bandwidth. And now Twitter Spaces, I started getting on that because I was looking at the Twitter files and I jumped into Mario Spaces. These big spaces with like a lot of people. And then I got in sort of on those panels speaking a little bit here and there, but the conversations drag on and on. So you could be on there for, they last for like anything
hours.
Between, you know, yeah, three. And like, I was on one that it was 14 hours. I went to bed and I woke up and they were still going hardcore.
Still going. I've fallen asleep on Twitter Spaces before too. Dude, it's crazy. And plus, in your case, and then it feels like you're at the big part, especially the Mario Spaces, you're at the gala event of alternative media voices, heavy hitters. It's like, I'm at the party. I got to be at the party. And then I'm up here speaking and all these people are hearing me, you know, it's like, it's pretty seductive.
Yeah, and then there's the after party. Like, so there's the after space, and that's like right. Zaganel, and there's some cool after spaces. Then there's some really whacked out, crazy stuff. There's even like the this you know, whole like white nationalist spaces and things like that. I mean, so you got to be careful.
After, after party where people are busting out, chopping up lines and stuff like that. It's like it gets seedy. It's like out, and you never have to leave your phone.
Oh my gosh. No, not that bad. Not that bad. But they do have the kind of ones where people are like talking about dating and relationships, or just the people that are on the other spaces just start talking about their relationships. And then it turns into a kind of a laugh, you know, like everyone's just making fun of each other. But it is kind of interesting. I like the medium, Joseph, and I think you're definitely on to something. You're saying that all radio outlets got to have a space. I think that's where it's going to that's where it's going to head. There is something about Twitter, the way it's designed, you can promulgate information really, really rapidly, and you can network and link up really quick. That's what makes it unique because of the way the platform's designed. So the audio spaces are great for that.
With radio, you have people calling in, but with Twitter, you could just have people up on stage, you can mute everybody, you could guide it, then you could have people chime in that you want. I mean, it really opens up the whole platform, if you will. I mean, it really does. It's pretty mesmerizing and amazing. And Elon Musk has like, what do you think of him in terms of, I know you're back in his good graces, or you thanked him as the manner of whatever, like is the new king of the world of free speech. And then he's got this lady coming on as the CEO. I don't know what her story is, but she's what is she, World Economic Forum type of person, or
half red pilled.
She's sort of red pilled. Okay, that's
she's
cool.
salmon pilled.
Okay, she's like a Bill Maher pilled. Sort of a, yes. She's in that Bill Maher program. That's cool. So do you trust Elon Musk, or do you think that this is a setup? He's going to collect all our data and put it in our brain chips. Is this like a, do you think he's controlled opposition, or do you believe in him?
Look, he's definitely a top G. So like, but the, you know, if Twitter goes public, right? If they go float on the stock market again, it's going to be for much more than they floated before, because Elon's wants to build it up and have all the investors get paid back eventually. That's probably the idea. That means that this things could change in a couple of years. My attitude is that's probably going to be out of our hands largely. So we got to make the best of it. And just do the most we can, create it into the platform in the space that we want. And maybe that will create the future on that platform, even if it goes public, that whoever takes it over, it's going to be so amazing and so diverse and resilient that and so magnetic that they won't want to change it. And they want to retain that free speech spirit. So that we can only hope for the best.
I believe in him. I believe this free speech thing is amazing. It's changing everything, including who we're dealing with president. I want to get into Roger Waters, but I want to finish up the presidential candidate thing a little bit with like Trump's weird, unhinged reaction to Ron DeSantis saying that Andrew Cuomo did a better job with COVID than Ron DeSantis. I thought that was actually offensive. I caught a little case of Trump derangement syndrome myself. I really did for the first time since early days Trump, before I got red pilled or whatever, I caught Trump derangement syndrome this week. It was weird because, you know, just a little mild case, just a little sniffles of Trump derangement syndrome. It wasn't like full blown AIDS Trump derangement syndrome. It was just a common cold. But, you know, it was enough. I was offended that he would say that about Cuomo, because I was in New York during COVID, and that was one of the worst people during that time. He's responsible for untold numbers of elderly deaths. And plus, he was tyrannical as you could possibly be. What do you make of Trump being this unhinged and speaking against so-called truther movement people that are against authoritarianism? If he's making statements like this, what does this mean in your view?
It means that he's probably going to hemorrhage some support during the primaries. But eventually, when you have an election cycle, it takes on a life of its own. And then the issues will normally gravitate towards sort of a stable of wedge issues and main issues. And that's where the conversation is going to end up. So I think they're going to want to get past COVID. Trump would definitely want to avoid, you know, talking about vaccines. But my feeling is he needs to face up to that issue at some point, because he can do that and still come out the thing. But his ego is so tied to Operation Warp Speed that has he evolved enough as a character, as a person, to be able to say, hey, the experts told me it was a total disaster. I'm sorry. Here's $50 billion for an injury compensation fund. I'll put my name on that. We're going to help all you guys that were hurt by these these evil pharma pushers and the Faucis of the world. That's how I would handle it, but I'm not his advisor. And if I was, he'd probably
sack. But he's going exactly opposite that way, dude. I mean, he's doubled down. He was like, he could easily get out of it if he said, hey, you know, he wouldn't even have to admit fault. He could go with like, hey, what we did during the pandemic was exactly right. We had to get this out there. But now, guys, it's not that time. Things have changed. I think we should wind this down. That's all he would have to do. And all his, like, you know, sort of Trump derangement syndrome works both ways, by the way. There's people that love him and worship him too much. And then there's people that hate him too much. It's derangement syndrome on both polarities. And all the people that love him too much would go, see there, he said it. He's saying it without saying it because he can't really say it because he's playing 5D chess while everyone else is playing checkers. They would all come in with that. So he would just have to mildly say something against continuing on with this. And yet he keeps doubling down. I think you're right. In the political sphere, it doesn't matter. People can just say whatever and they have a very short attention span, but I think this issue has affected negatively so many people that he's gonna have to confront it, and I do think it is hurting him.
I think so, but still we'll see how the primaries shake out. He might not even make it because they've got all these legal cases stacked up against him. The Democrats, they do not want him to run, period, and they'll do anything to keep him off the ballot. So I think because the polling shows that Trump's way ahead. So why did DeSantis come in if he's not polling strong? Maybe because he's been told by his donors that Trump ain't going to be in the primaries. And right. That would open the door for – there's Ron right there. Boom. The path is clear.
Yeah.
So I've got my conspiracies as well, Joseph. You know, like I'm
– Well, yours are sound. Yours are sound, man. I mean, when you say that, I'm like, ah, you open up light bulbs when you talk, Mr. Henningsen. You do, and I'm not blowing smoke.
I have a special tinfoil hat that's a high-end designer.
You got the high-end.
State-of-the-art. It's titanium-lined tinfoil hat.
I got a TJ Maxx one. It barely works. It's plugged in, but it's
it
also.
Says obey. It says obey on the front.
Dude, mine is terrible, man. Listen, wait, one other question before we go to a break is RFK Jr. You said DeSantis doesn't have that national vim and vigor. He's cool for this state stuff and his little anti-woke thing is okay, but whatever. But what about RFK Jr.? Does he have this national agenda gravitas? I mean, we've heard his whole thing on vaccines, obviously, and he's making impressive statements about Roger Waters and stuff like that. But does he have the thing Trump has in your view?
I'm going to say he doesn't. He doesn't because he's reacting and giving solutions to problems that have popped up. But he hasn't come and said, this is how we're going to get out of this economic recession. We're going to do this, this, and this. And I'm going to end the war in 24 hours. So Trump still is the master at the big plan, chief executive style. Literally commands the stage, says we're going to do, and people will normally believe what he's going to tell them because he did pretty much everything that he promised. Not everything good, but he did everything he promised. RFK though has the Kennedy name. He's got he talks to people. He's very relatable. He is RFK Jr. And he comes and speaks truth about the assassination of his uncle, of his father. And he's credible and he's fearless. And this is amazing. And I think this is the best thing for the Democratic Party because it needed this. This has been missing from the Democratic Party forever. And I think for this reason, it's great for American politics. I want to see him go all the way in the primaries. They might not allow him to get any delegates or whatever, but I want to see him in a debate with Biden.
That would be phenomenal. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Remember Too Big to Fail? That was the popular narrative about large banks. to justify the unprecedented federal bailout following the 2008 financial crisis. Well, there's an implication in too big to fail, and that is, if you're not that big, go ahead and fail. Well, that's exactly what's happening right now, as small community banks and slightly larger regional banks are being allowed to go out of business, and the mega banks being allowed to purchase all their assets. What's happening is a concentration of wealth and financial services among just a handful of mega banks, who will then set the agenda. We've all seen how regulatory capture has impeded the financial markets, with the FEC being functionally owned by the large Wall Street banks, and FDA and CDC being functionally owned by Big Pharma. Well, allowing the big banks to set the agenda does not bode well for the future, especially when they start pushing for central bank digital currency, CBDCs. Watch out, America. It's coming. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
The Fallen 15 was created to honor and celebrate those who gave their lives in the global war on terrorism and to inspire others to come together and support our military families left behind. Through various programs and camaraderie events, the Fallen 15 fosters a positive environment where veterans, friends, and families of the fallen can heal and join together to rebuild bonds. Go to thefallen15.org to read about this year's honorees and to support their effort to support its mission. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
If you're talking about it,
the United States of America should never, ever default on its debt.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Patrick, when I was 16 years old, listening to The Wall, smoking weed in Ohio, and watching The Wall, we understood that when there was imagery of fascism and there was all that sort of imagery going on, we didn't think that meant Roger Waters was pro-Nazi. And we were idiots. We were absolute, I can tell you, we were idiots. And we knew we were watching art in a theatrical presentation. In fact, we also knew that they were anti that. Like, we knew that. Like, what is going on in our world in 2023 where Roger Waters is being accused of being a Nazi for doing that very same thing live in concert after a whole career pretty much being very obviously anti-Nazi? What's happening? What is, please explain the world to me.
Yeah, so in Germany as well, like the home of avant-garde theater, you'd think that they'd get it. But so, I mean, doing a live theatrical rendition of The Wall, it's a classic. It's a rebels classic of stage and film and whatnot. And so what is it, the world, he hasn't changed. It's the same performance. It's the same material, but the world's changed. Roger Waters is in the same place, but the world has shifted and it's put him, he's now far right, according to the German police. Can you believe that? Like, he's as, Joseph, Roger Waters is as left as you get. Like, he is a hardcore, dyed-in-the-wool lefty. There's nothing you can do to pull him off that. And now he's being accused of being a far-right, anti-Semite, blah, 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 blah. Totally ridiculous. It's because Roger Waters is a thorn in the side of the war machine. He always has been. He's also championed the underdog, including the people in Venezuela or the Palestinians or whatever. So they'll look for any excuse to take a shot at him. And there's, it's such a desperate shot. And it's just, I mean, come on. And it's also because of the Ukraine thing. They're really tender on this issue in Germany because everyone knows it's a bad deal for the German government. Nord Stream pipeline blew up. Everyone's quiet about it. They're all afraid to speak up. This is really, it is scary, but ridiculous at the same time. And I'm like, when is this this going to break? This spell that's on, everyone's under this spell. And in some places, and like, when is the spell going to fall? Because eventually it has to fall, Joseph. These things do not uphold forever.
But is everyone on the spell? I mean, I didn't like do any deep dives. I mean, I certainly tweeted at some dude that was going off on Roger Waters and supported him and everything. And just like, you know, the one I wrote about, I actually wrote it up on top of Camelback Mountain, is so, does this mean we need to cancel Steven Spielberg for Schindler's List? Are we not allowed to represent Nazis in any theatrical or film presentation at all? Because that's what Roger Waters is doing. You might not agree with his politics, you know, and think he's got something's wrong, but this like sort of dumb, abject character assassination stuff just seems to backfire on the people portraying it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's not gonna stick with him. It just proves that he's in the right. I think he likes it. He likes taking the shots from the establishment because he always punches back. He always hits back.
Yeah,
and I think that's the great thing about guys like that is because they're never down. And he has the platform. So few people of that. You said he was the GOAT. He is the totally GOAT. But he, at that level,
lyrically,
to hit back. I mean,
yeah,
he's using his platform. He's too big to fail. I wish there were more artists of that stature that would do that. I mean, there's just not enough. But at least he's there, and you know, he could use a bit of support, though. Is all I'm saying.
He didn't raise his voice about the COVID stuff, though. He did not raise his voice about vaccines, which is wild. What does he raise his voice about that gets him in the most trouble? I know the Ukraine stuff, but what's his take on Israel and Palestine? Can you explain that as to what his take is on that? And that's what's really garnered a lot of this, right?
Yeah. He's an anti-imperialist, and he absolutely supports freeing Julian Assange. He's been consistent on that campaign. He helped to expose, after we exposed it at 21st Century Wire first, the white helmets in Syria was a total propaganda construct by the Western governments and a kind of pseudo search and rescue NGO that was used to market the war to Western audiences. And Roger Waters exposed it at a few of his concerts. And that was huge because that made it a mainstream issue at that point. But he's always there to defend the underdog. He's probably a socialist. And so he will, you know, defend socialist countries that are being persecuted or sanctioned or attacked. And the Palestinians are the ultimate underdog geopolitically and in modern history. So he's there for them. So, I mean, but on COVID vaccines, he's probably more mainstream on those issues. So he won't see him speaking out. A lot of people, Democrats or people on the left, that really wasn't an issue that they would they weren't ready to die on the hill for, as opposed to conservatives and libertarians. So, and I think that's just a political tendency, you know. I'm not going to say that's for everybody, but generally that's what I've observed. Yeah, it would be nice if people realize the fascism at home, because that's what we had to live through with COVID lockdowns and the vaccine mandates and all that. But not everybody gets it, and I'm not going to hold it against them, to be honest, because he's doing such great work and on the global stage that no one's perfect. You know, it'd be nice though. It'd be nice. I won't lie. It'd be great if he was on our team there, but you know.
What do you think is the most dangerous thing threatening humanity right now of all the sort of doomsday scenarios that we're facing?
That's a really interesting question. I think it's a type of collective madness. I feel like a lot of people have gone mad. I feel like society, I think Western civilization is at an inflection point where it doesn't know what to do. It doesn't know where to go. And the technocrats want to basically CBDC, lock us down, slave us down, put us in a digital cell, birthing pods and, you know, gender fluid, trans everything, and just a meaningless blob of, you know, and just nothingness. Like, then the people want to push, some people want to push back with freedom and liberty and all that, but we still have this technology issue. Like, where are we going with all this? And, you know, and can we control, AI is now kind of in the ascendancy. Where's that going to lead? Could that just be a catastrophic, cascading cataclysm of AI mishaps, one after the other, ending in some, you know, nuclear power station blowing up or something? I don't know. I just think I don't know. We're in a unique position, Joseph, because we span the we were low tech. We were from the low tech and then the mid tech and now the high tech gen. So like we've seen the whole continuum. And so we were there before there were mobile phones.
That's right.
So that's like, so
I remember when I kept getting the BlackBerry, where the one you could type on, and that made me a G. I had always had rocked a BlackBerry pre-iPhone for like many. The first one that could be a phone, BlackBerry, I had that. That's who you're talking to. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, this. I remember when you had to, you know, if you were meeting someone for a girl for a date, you had to call on the landline the day before. You had to be at the place to meet at that time. And if anything happened,
oh, yeah,
then it's like no show or, oh, how late are they going to be? Yeah. You end up waiting for an hour and they stood you up.
You had to wait.
Or something happened, they got home for a call sometimes. Or their train got canceled or whatever. Yeah, you had to go back home and then wait. Yeah. I mean, all that stuff, they don't even fathom any of that these days, the Gen Zers. What comes after Gen Z, by the way? Doesn't that disturb you that they ended it, the alphabet, so quickly? Like what, Gen A?
Listen, there's so many things that we're supposed to be disturbed by. I was telling Anna the other day, I was like, you know what? Like all the doomsday scenarios, there's conspiracy theories for the left and for the right. For the left, it's the environment. That's going to be the end of the world. For the right, it's, you know, whatever, globalism, and they're not going to let us eat meat anymore. And, you know, we're going to run out of food. I start to feel like the PSYOP is fear, is just what you said, I think, your initial answer, just that the main threat to humanity is mental illness. And honestly, yes, like getting people to disidentify with their thoughts, at least like some of the time, like I think it was Wordsworth who said, we are like the wick. Humans are like the wick in the vast oil of the collective. And I think we need to identify with the vast oil more than just our little burning heads, if you know what I mean. And I think all the distractions and all the fear brings us into the burning head space. And that's where most people live all the time. And I mean, I make a concerted effort every day to identify with the pool of oil that is the collective, because that's where peace is. And like John Lennon said, I'll give you everything I got for a little peace of mind. So that is the ultimate value. And I feel like that's the key towards mental health. You become mentally healthy the more time you spend there, because then the Holy Spirit can work through you and heal you. You know, and this is the kind of thing I think people need to hear about, because no matter what side of the political equation you're on, we have a conspiracy theory for you that's going to bring doomsday. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Everyone's trying to make their way in life, make their way in the world. I mean, it's great when you're climbing a mountain with, 500 other people, because you're all going in the same direction. But out in life, in the real world, everyone's together, but going in different directions, at different speeds, doing different things, or different parts of their life. I find it fascinating. I feel very fortunate that I'm able to like at least have time to look and reflect on that, because I know some people are working so hard 9 to 5. I used to work hard 8 till 5 or 8 till 6 and do really hard labor jobs for years, and I didn't have as much time. I'd maybe get some downtime on the weekend, but I do observe people, and I think people are fascinating. I'm awe-inspired even by, you know, just people doing the simplest things, because I realize, you know, life's tough for everybody. But yeah, you're right about dipping into the collective oil, not to lose sight of the fact that all these borders that we have, all these political parties that we have, they don't really mean anything when you're up in the orbit looking down at the planet. You know, it's... It is pretty frivolous, all of the divisions and labels and, you know, what we think are differences. If the Martians come down and take a look, they don't see any differences. They're all like, you guys are all the same. What are you guys fighting for? But
They want us in a perpetual state of conflict. And that's like sort of more and more occurs to me all the time, you know, not that we shouldn't be vigilant, not that we shouldn't keep speaking truth to power, not that we shouldn't be going for what's right and being fearless about speaking for it. But at the same time, you know, laugh a little bit, right, Giza? Am I right? You know, I mean, when now that you're in the UK, can you do the streets, man? Are you doing an English accent?
You know what I mean? All right.
You get on the pint. You go to the pub and get a pint, mate. Is that what you're doing right now, Giza?
Pint and a
Are you going down to the... Are you getting a pack of crisps, mate? Giza. Listen, when are you coming back to Arizona, Patrick? I miss you. Hiking Camelback is fun. I'm a man alone. I'm on the mountain alone. My friend, Patrick Henningsen, he's not there anymore. What's happening, Patrick? When are you coming home?
We'll make it happen sooner than later. So, yeah, watch this space. I miss it too. And I miss you. And I miss, quite frankly, the best weather in the world, truth be known. But,
dude, it is. Yeah.
The only thing that's missing is the beach.
That's true, but it's not that far away. All right, Geezer, I need excitement, and we're going to go away now. So watch Patrick Henningsen's show. Listen to it every Monday through Friday, 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern. Thanks, Patrick. Keep listening, everybody. We'll be right back. Nice one, mate. TNT.